Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight is comedy writer, producer, and director. Jeannie Gaffigan has won awards for her work behind the scenes, but you know her as the comic foil in her husband Jim's stand-up.
I do love them. They're my in-laws. That's a strange term, in-laws. Are you related? Legally. In a court of law. In-law, it's like the opposite of being in love. We're in law. We law each other. Very much. In-laws are like family or a sign. It's like, you want to spend your life with that person? You got to take those 10 people. All of them? My only issue with my in-laws is there's too many of them. My wife is one of 9 children. So every holiday, all 9 of the siblings and their individual families all get together and spend every moment together. Over Christmas, I went to a movie with 30 people. I didn't even know that was legal. We were walking around, people thought we were from a church. To put it in perspective, Jesus only walked around with 12. I learned very quickly, I don't want to do anything with 30 people. If I was on the Titanic and the last rescue boat was filled with 30 people, I'd be like, you guys, go ahead. I don't want to be there when you're trying to decide where to eat lunch. Often it was more than 30 people, because sometimes those 30 people will invite other people. So you'll have conversations and someone will be like, I'm your wife's uncle's best friend. Like, oh, there's a term for that. Stranger. You're a total stranger.
That was a clip from Quality Time, Jim Gaffigan's current special, which is on Amazon. Jeannie Gaffigan directed it. It's not an understatement to call out Jeannie as the heart and soul of the Gaffigan dynasty. She co-writes, she co-produces, she directs her husband, all the while being the rock that keeps her family, the same family referenced in Jim's act, together and thriving. But in 2017, Jeannie was having headaches and balance issues, and the unfunniest thing possible happened. She was diagnosed with a brain tumor. She writes about the experience in her new book, When Life Gives You Pears, The Healing Power of Family, Faith, and Funny People. Jeannie Gaffigan is my guest in the studio on Extension 720. Jeannie, thanks for being here.
Wow, thanks, Justin. What a great introduction.
Well, this is such a personal story, and everything about it is really about your journey, but why tell it in book form?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was very resistant to telling it in book form, and prior to this, like, what we call like the earthquake happening to our family where our whole house crumbled and now we're like rebuilding it and it's like a much better house, which is what kind of the book is about. I was in the process of doing many things as we tend to do in the prolific Gaffigan dynasty, as you call it. And I was on the side from making the next special, which was at the time Noble Ape, unnamed yet, but
that's a big favorite in our household, by the way.
This one, and that's the one that has all the medical stuff in it.
Right,
so that was not even, you know, a twinkle in its father's eye at the time. But we had just wrapped the previous special before that, and Jim decided we were going to do a new special. And I was like, Jim, we don't have any material. And he said, that's going to be the fun part of it, is to book a theater to film it in September. It was like February or something, and we're going to do a special, and we're going to make a documentary, a shot on iPhones, about how we have no material, and we're going to chronicle this whole journey. And it was like such a great idea because I could just see me being like, are you crazy? And it was kind of like, it had a lot of conflict in it, and I loved the idea. And then plus we'd have a special at the end, which is really great. So if that wasn't enough, on the side, I was working on a book, which was a sort of in the genre of the kind of Irma Bombeck, like classic crazy mom, like trying to cope with the crazy husband who's so busy and all the kids. Because a lot of people were asking me, wait, you go on these tours, how do you pack 5 kids?
Right.
What does your laundry room look like and all this stuff? So I actually have a whole system that I do that is basically, I have some attributes of ADHD. Like I forget what I'm doing all the time. So I make lists, and I have lists all over my house and signs and And it's kind of a system, and it kind of works.
Yeah, right.
So I was like, I can share the system with, like, the world in kind of a funny way.
Like a recipe
so,
book.
Yes. Yeah. So this book was more of a, not a, like, textbook, but more of a kind of a lot of photos, a lot of funny, like, tongue-in-cheek stuff. Kind of like, I don't know if you've ever read any of Amy Sedaris's, like,
of course, yeah.
books about crafting. Yeah. And she's, like, stabbing herself with needles. So it was kind of like this project that was going on. And because I was a story editor on Dad is Fat and Food to Love Story, I already had a book agent who was like, Jeannie, when are you going to write the Mom is Crazy book, you know? So I was working with him. And then suddenly, MRI for hearing loss revealed that I like had like 2 days to live. So that kind of put a damper on all the projects.
It's amazing to think that what must have been going through your mind at that time, because you are such a busy person, and like you said, with all the organization and all the lists and all the projects that you balance, not just with your husband, but your own, to almost say, I've got these balance issues or these headaches, and it's a stress, it's too much, I'm doing too much, and compartmentalizing it that way. Take us there. Take us to that moment of recognizing it was more than just a heavy workload.
I'll take you to that moment, but let me like kind of relive when that moment was, because the moment that I found out there was something wrong with me, I still wasn't connecting the dots. It was so weird to find out I had a mass in my brain. And it wasn't until that I actually went into a neurosurgery department and talked to a chief of neurosurgery, and he saw the massive tumor on my brainstem.
Shaped like a pear.
Where he was like, do you have headaches? I'm like, I do. Do you have balance issues? I'm like, I do, but it's not really related to the headaches, is it? And then hearing loss, like it all, I just felt like a complete idiot, because I was like, it was like the moment at the end of The Usual Suspects when they see all the pictures and it's like, wait a minute. Now I understand
right,
what's
right.
been
it's all
happening.
The puzzle's coming together, right?
So it was sort of a what I describe as a sheepish moment in my book, that I was like, oh wow, I have had all the symptoms of a brain tumor. But even the most paranoid hypochondriac would not be like, I have a massive brain tumor, because maybe they would, but, and also I have to apologize about my voice. I had vocal cord surgery recently because one of the gifts that my tumor has left me is a paralyzed left vocal cord. So we're trying to kind of get it back working.
There's so much that obviously comes from having a brain tumor, and I can't even begin to understand it. What did you know about brain tumors before this happened?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I knew nothing about brain tumors. Now I'm like, I went to medical school practically, but I really didn't ever plan on writing a book about my experience ever. I was focused on getting out of bed and getting off the breathing tube and the feeding tube. And that's was kind of like my struggle. And my book agent, who is now a friend because the years of like working together, checked in with me. And I kind of took it as, when is that like How to Organize Your Laundry Room book going to get done?
Because like
we have a deadline.
Check, right.
And I wasn't with a publisher. I was with them in the manuscript phase of it. But he wanted to shop it around. But that's not why he was like checking in with me. He wanted to see like if I was okay, you know? And I said, Simon, I said, I'm going to finish that book. I just need to be able to like grip a pen and sit at a laptop. And he's like, Jeannie, first of all, you're not writing that book anymore. You are writing a book. If you write a book, you're writing a book about what happened to you, because everyone is asking what happened, how did it happen, why did it happen? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I said, well, can I just make a chapter in like the How to Organize the Laundry Room book about the brain tumor and be like, oh, by the way, you know, or
epilogue.
Put it in the appendix?
Yeah,
or
right,
he goes,
right,
no.
Right.
So, A, that was kind of planted the seed with me being like, okay, people want to hear what is going on.
Right.
And then secondly, because I'm a writer, and I'm sure that anyone who was like a musician or a painter or anything, when you process like a crisis, in order to cope with it, you use whatever coping mechanism you had. And so, you know, Jim and I have for years coped with life by writing comedy about it. And that's kind of the lens through which we view the world and different things that happen to us. So during the time, whether it was I was telling people, oh, get a pen, write this down. I have an idea. Or when I started to be a little more functional, I always had my iPhone. And I was usually calling people being like, can someone come in the bedroom? I'm lonely. Everyone's having fun out there. But I started writing like little notes to myself. So when I came out of being attached to machines, I right away started to write the chronology of what happened. Because I was like, what did happen? Because it just kind of like blew me over. And during that time, I had all these little like drips and drabs. So it was almost as if I was interviewing my sick self in the moment. And then, of course, I have who I am before this happened, which, you know, no one really knows because I'm kind of in the background. So what came out of it was a manuscript.
The book is called When Life Gives You Pears, The Healing Power of Family, Faith, and Funny People. Jeannie Gaffigan's my guest. You could see her directing Quality Time, Jim's special, which is Jim Gaffigan's special, which is on Amazon now. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue the conversation here with Jeannie Gaffigan on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Jeannie Gaffigan's my guest. She's got the new book, When Life Gives You Pears, The Healing Power of Family, Faith, and Funny People. Jeannie also is directed Jim Gaffigan, her husband's special, Quality Time, which is now on Amazon, which I just watched, which is entirely funny. It's amazing how much Jim and you, as a co-writer and a co-producer, you guys can mine your lives for comedy. And it just seems like that's what, that's a special sauce that you two have created to be able to continue to produce at such a high level. It's amazing.
Well, thank you. I really think that it's just really a coping mechanism, really, to be honest with you, even if it's just about like body wash or something. It just, you know, sometimes it just takes an extra eye on something to realize that we all have such a common experience. And especially in the world now where it seems like everyone's kind of divided and fighting and bickering, it's like we're all really the same in so many ways. And I think that's kind of what we kind of highlight.
In the book, and we're talking about your diagnosis of the brain tumor in 2017. That's what this book is about. But it's really about overcoming. It's about looking back at that experience, but also how you coped with it, like you just said. Funny People is one of it, and you can understand completely with a family like yours how you can use humor to get over something like this. But let's talk about faith, because that's also a big part of how you approached getting better after the tumor.
It wasn't like this happened to me and all of a sudden I was like, oh, there is a God. But at the same time, it wasn't like I was, you know, a holy roller and then was like, if there was a God, how could this have happened? You know, which is, I think is another way people go. But I've always been someone who believes in God. Like it just was the way I was brought up. And, you know, my mom was always like, God is going to be with you today. The angels are watching you. So I sort of like grew up believing that there was more than just this world. And I went through different phases of, you know, caring about it more than others. And usually in a time of need is when I would be like, oh, yeah, God, help.
Yeah, right.
And so essentially, when this happened, it was pretty much overwhelming to me. I couldn't really wrap my mind around how I could really go on. And how my life could go on if everything I had set up could go on without me. And because I'm so kind of reluctantly high achieving in my life, I sort of set everyone up for failure because I needed to be there. And I think that it was almost a detriment to my husband and my kids because I was like, oh, don't worry about it, Jim. I'll take care of it. And to the point where he didn't know a lot of the teacher's names. Do you know what I mean? Because he didn't have to. I was like, I'll handle it. And I turned to God in that moment. And I was just like, look, I've heard God doesn't give us anything we can't handle. Well, this one I can't handle. So can you handle it? And so rather than just, you know, retreating to my bedroom and going under the covers and being like, okay, God's handling this, I really believe that like having that extra supernatural thing that was there gave me the strength to know that it was all part of a bigger picture, all part of a bigger story. And it also, I also had to face the fact that I had to put my money where my mouth is because if I'm you know, going around to my kids being like, heaven, you're going to heaven. And then all of a sudden when I'm about to go to heaven, I'm like, oh, actually, I was just kidding. I don't believe in anything. It's all, you know, there's nothing. It's terrible.
Come so closer. Like, let me tell you a secret about life. There's nothing.
Yeah, because it's like all of a sudden you're like, oh, you know, that heaven I've been saying is so great and it's what your all goal is. Well, I don't want to go there right now. I want to stay alive because I don't know if there really is a heaven. So it challenges your faith. So I'm just like, okay, I believe that there is something and I have to be ready to say that.
When you were faced with an expiration date.
Yeah.
And the overwhelming sense that you need to tie up loose ends. Like what was the feeling at that point? Because you mentioned just sort of being a reluctant high achiever and also wanting to make sure that your family or at least your husband knew the teacher's names. But right. but what goes through your mind at that point when you're given a diagnosis like you were?
Well, I had a really, really good piece of advice from the physician's assistant of my brain surgeon, because I asked the exact same question. I'm like, okay, I'm having brain surgery on Monday. I have 2 days off. I had this meeting on Thursday where I found out I had a brain tumor. I knew the day before that I had a mass in my brain. The MRI was the day before that. So this was really quick. And then on the Friday, which was Good Friday, I was just going to get scanned all day long. Like, just they were going to take all these pictures and MRIs and CAT scans of my head and neck to sort of map out VR style surgery they do now to try to save your nerves and your brain tissue. So I had like 2 days off with my family. And I was like, what do I do in 2 days? How do I wrap things up? Because I really don't know what I'm going to come out of. Like, I don't know, am I going to be in a wheelchair? Will I be able to talk? Will I be alive? You know? And so the physician's assistant said, just get everything that needs to be set up for the next week. She's like, just don't make your will. She's like, don't do any of that stuff.
Just make sure the groceries are there.
Just make sure that for a week.
For a week.
If you were out, you and Jim were like out for a week, what would you need to do? And she put it in that smaller like scale. And I was like, I can do that. I can figure out how to cover everything for a week. And it won't take all my time away from being with my kids. And, you know, it was like Easter weekend and everyone was home and Jim was home and we had plans. And I was like, I'm going to do all those plans.
How much are you in the moment saying, I'm going to just move forward with life. This is the way it is. And how much of it is I want to reflect and get emotional about what my family might look like if I'm not here?
It was just those two concepts were just enmeshed, because it was like, I want to be an incident that where Jim and I kind of got in an argument, because it was Saturday. And if any children are listening, I was helping the Easter Bunny prepare to hide the baskets. Okay. And it was very important to me to make it very good. But I was in a room by myself really working on this project. And Jim came in and said, shouldn't you be spending like one-on-one time with all your kids? And I was like, this is really, really important to me. And now, you know, in retrospect, I'm like, well, maybe that was a wrong choice to make. Maybe I should have just taken each of them in a room and been like, tell me about your day or whatever, which eventually I did spend time with each of them. But it's like, he was kind of like, what if this time is never again going to be, I mean, it was deep. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of deep stuff happening. But to me, I was like, what if I don't make helping the Easter Bunny make the Easter baskets, like that will be the Easter that it didn't happen. Or if I don't, like, if I let someone else do it, it doesn't have, like, mom's touch on it.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of, like, kind of heavy stuff going on. And I did wind up making the Easter baskets. And then I was able to, you know, spend some time with my kids. And so it was deep.
Jeannie Gaffigan's my guest. Her new book, When Life Gives You Pears, The Healing Power of Family, Faith, and Funny People, is out. It's really a story about overcoming brain tumor, and that's what we're talking about, the moment she found out about it and the surgery. And we'll continue the conversation right after the news. Jeannie Gaffigan, of course, award-winning producer, director. She directed Quality Time, Jim Gaffigan, her husband's special, which is currently on Amazon. Take a quick break, come back, get the headlines, and continue our conversation with Jeannie Gaffigan here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 and 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Jeannie Gaffigan's my guest, the award-winning director, producer, co-writer. She has just directed the great special, which is on Amazon, of her husband, Jim Gaffigan, called Quality Time. Check it out. And also, she's the author of When Life Gives You Pears, The Healing Power of Family, Faith, and Funny People, which is really the story of being diagnosed with a brain tumor back in 2017. It's what I love about Jim's stuff is that his ability to tell the story of your family. And he does it in such a humorous way, of course, and that's why we laugh, but it's real. It's authentic, and I know you're part of that, and obviously you guys work in this way that you bounce jokes off of each other. How important was humor in this experience for you?
It was so important. It was like, you know how you hear laughter is the best medicine? And Jim always jokes, like, after you get the real medicine, it's good. But there was a period of time where Jim was not funny. And it was when I was in the ICU and I had developed double lung strep pneumonia and I got a really bad prognosis. Like, you're not getting out. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like a life and death situation, like every day. And I realized that I was addicted to Jim being funny because he was just not funny. He would just come in and like kind of rattle off like, you know, what the kids were doing and who was come flying in. And I was not able to talk. And I would try to like communicate him in kind of kabuki style eye movements. And he was like, what's wrong? What's going on?
Like, I want you to be funny.
Yeah. And so there was a part of me that got really sad because I knew that he was canceling shows. I knew that my inability to go home was keeping him around. And I wanted to get better. I wanted to get up. And I wanted him to be able to just be Jim again. And during that same period of time, because we life we live and what kind of friends we have and the families we've come from, the people who came to visit me in the hospital were a lot of funny people. And there was something that was so terrific about people being irreverent when we're in the hospital. Right. Because I think we all have this built-in kind of instinct that when we go to visit someone in the hospital, we have to be really quiet and sad and be like, oh, how are you? Are you okay? Are you going to, you know, and like, you're sick. And I had people coming in being like, what, you're not even bald? And I came all the way uptown. You know, it's like, and I just loved that. You know, I just loved that people would come in because these are the type of people who don't care what's appropriate, right? But they don't have that kind of social pressure to be sad in the hospital. They're just going to be funny. And that really, like, I felt like my blood was pumping, like I was healing. So eventually, we found ways to get rid of some of the machines that I could only be on in the hospital. I knew that it was going to be a long road of recovery, but instead of having like the nasogastric feeding tube, I was able to get a PEG tube, which was in my stomach. And instead of, you know, having the breathing tube, I got a tracheotomy. So there were these things that were these really like disgusting things that were like, yay, a PEG tube. And so eventually we get discharged from the hospital. We move home to nursing care at home. And at that point, funny Jim came back. And it was something about leaving the hospital and realizing that now, even though it was going to be a long road ahead, it wasn't going downhill.
Right.
And he just all of a sudden, and I kind of went in the dumps because I had kind of this psychological feeling that when you go home, you're better. Like, when I get out of here, when I see my kids, I'm going to spring back to life and do it Irish jig.
Yeah, right.
And it didn't happen. So I was, like, frustrated because, you know, when you wake up in the middle of the night and you hear something, you feel that instinct, like, I'm going to protect my kids and I'm going to take a baseball bat and go to the door and see who's there. And I was so weak. I was like, I can't. I'm worthless. I can't take care of my kids. I can't do anything. I can't even get up and go to the bathroom by myself. But Jim would not let me stay in the dumps. And he would create these characters. Like, he pretended he was a horse. And he'd come over to the bed and be like, your carriage, my lady. And he'd, like, put me on his back and, like, take me into the bathroom. And it was so funny. He washed my hair one time when I was like, oh, my hair is so disgusting. I can't get up. I can't take a bath. I can't whatever. And so he like bent my head over the bathtub with the hose. And all of a sudden he became like this Steel Magnolias, like gossipy salon owner character who was like, honey, let me tell you about men. I've been married 5 times. And I mean, and I was in stitches and he brightened my day. And even though all this time that we've been married, I've been sort of taking care of him and taking care of the kids. And like, and he did really learn the skills of a caregiver. When I needed it, his caregiving was exactly what I needed. And just to tie the faith thing back in, I realized that, oh, this was designed. Like, Jim and my partnership was designed for this moment. You'd think I would have had that revelation, like, with every single one of the amazing kids we have or the amazing, like, specials that we've made or the TV show
TV
we did
shows,
together.
Right.
But it was in that moment where I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm a death's door. And the guy who's pulling me out of it is the funniest man in the world. I mean, it just was so clear to me that I was like, this has got to be a divine plan.
It's not every day that you have spouses that work together, whether it be especially in comedy. It's difficult because you have to be pretty intimate in the space and all of the work. And not to mention you can bring that home and you have to co-parent and you do everything like this. And of course, being in a position where one of the spouse falls ill. How do you guys do it? How do you do it where you don't let all the other things get in the way of work or letting work get in the way of other things?
Well, I mean, letting work get in the way of other things is a problem. Okay, let me put it that way. That's another thing that now I'm really aware of is that it's so easy to just let work take over your life, especially when your work course is like Jim and I. But the positive side of that is that when Jim and I met, I wasn't doing writing comedy and he wasn't doing like acting. Okay. But we had the similar personality. We're both from the Midwest. We both grew up on Lake Michigan, different sides of Lake Michigan. We both are from these huge Catholic families. I'm the eldest. He's the youngest. It's like a match made in codependent in heaven. And we both just worked. And I think that previous dating relationships that we'd have just didn't work out because people don't want to compete with work. But we kind of like saw that we got all intertwined with our like relationship and work. It was just always something that we love to create and produce stuff together. And at first it was just our own things. It was like, can you help me with this thing? And can I help you with that thing? And what and like you said, it's very rare to be a co-comedy writer. And Jim was probably like, had the most like in the vault, like no one's going to write a joke for me. And what happened, and this is dating our how old we are, but one day Jim came over to my apartment and I lived with my sister at the time. And he said, listen, he said, Rich Voss just produced his own CD. He put out his own CD. Do you think that you could help me do that? And I'm like, sure, the technology is pretty easy. I know what I could do. I could just record you and get the best cuts and put it on a CD.
Yeah, right.
And like, do some audio, to program to check the levels between like clubs or whatever. So we bought a little microphone, a little digital recorder, and I started going around to the clubs with him recording the same set. And then eventually I started being like, well, you know what? The last time you did the bit about the manatee, it was kind of funnier because it was like you came up with it. And my kind of directing kind of started working with his.
Because it's not just about the jokes. It's about the delivery. It's about the posture. It's everything, right?
And then I was kind of like, you know, how you were cursing there. I just think that we could just go not take that first bus. And it just started to, we started to work together. And then I started being like, you know, a good tagline for that. But it wasn't like I was auditioning to be a writer. It just naturally happened. And that's when he kind of like opened up to me helping him write. And then as well, you know, Jim's kind of observational style, it's like kind of like finding a topic and just hammering it to death, like bacon. What else about bacon? What else? 5 minutes about bacon, 10 minutes about bacon. And so when you have another brain in that process, it was like that was kind of like the open door. It's like, okay, I have 5 minutes on bacon. What else about bacon?
And Quality Time, the Jim Gaffigan special, which is on Amazon, is great. It's vintage and it's new Jim Gaffigan. But to have this experience that you chronicle in the book to be 2 years behind you, it's still here, obviously, talking to us about, you know, with a paralyzed vocal cord and you're still having health issues. But where are you? Do you feel like you're out of the woods, or is this something, that experience, that's going to stay with you forever?
I feel like I'm out of the woods. I really do. I feel great. I'm a very happy person. I won't lie. I still sweat the small stuff. Like, I still had like an issue at LaGuardia Airport this morning with someone. And then about the difference is that instead of letting that tank my day, it's like, whoa, I'm in LaGuardia Airport. I'm going to Chicago. I'm, you know, this is amazing. So it's like I see a little bit further ahead. So, yes, there are setbacks. And I have no doubt that there's going to be another, like, whopper around the corner, because life is hard. And the older you get, the more you realize you can't hide from pain. Bad stuff happens. But I think that what has come out of this thing, and believe me, this story and many other people's stories don't end so well. And I'm very well aware of that. So I don't want to say I have the worldview like everything might end tomorrow, so carpe diem. But I kind of do. It's like every time I swallow water, I am so grateful that I can swallow water, because it was so long when I couldn't swallow water. But before I got the brain tumor, I never even thought about swallowing water. I'd probably complain about how it tasted like, you know, something weird in it. And now I'm just like so happy to swallow water. And it's easy for me to remember now, because I do have some compromises health-wise, and it is kind of hard for me to swallow. But what my wish is that, first of all, for myself, that when it does get easier, because I believe it will with time, that I don't forget. And I'm going to set up my life that if I have to put signs all over my house, be like, remember, you almost died. And what I wish for everyone else is that they don't have to go through this kind of thing to realize, wow, this could all go away. Every time they look at their child, yeah, to be like, this could all go away. And smell their hair more.
The book is called When Life Gives You Pears, The Healing Power of Family, Faith, and Funny People. Jeannie Gaffigan, a true pleasure. Thanks for being my guest
tonight. Thank you so much for having me.